Experienced pilots keep having fatal stall spin accidents. What will it take? I'm Paul Plagg, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. Bob Miller is my guest, publisher of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. Bob also operates a flight school called Bob Miller Flight Training at the Lancaster Buffalo Airport in Western New York. We're here to talk, as we do on Mondays, about safety topics, and especially to elaborate on some of the points Bob makes in his monthly newsletter. Bob, thanks for taking some time out for our listeners today.
As always, Paul, I enjoy doing this.
All right. You mentioned in the current edition of Over the Airwaves an accident that happened in a Cirrus SR-22 in which the pilot of the plane was in a 30-degree bank and allowed his airspeed to drop to 60 knots while making an approach to landing. And the obvious happened. And you also mentioned a couple of links in the accident chain here. Tell us about this accident and why it's so frustrating.
Well, this particular accident, this is all according to information contained in the NTSB accident report, essentially said that the individual was making an approach in an SR-22 to a small airport, fairly short runway. It had an up and down tilt to the runway, and typically we land uphill and we take off downhill to the extent that winds permit. But in this particular case, according to the report, the pilot elected to land downhill with a tailwind, which was just about the two wrong things that you would ever want to do. And I don't know why and for what reason he chose that particular runway to land on, but it became apparent that he realized that he had a very short runway, so in his effort to slow the airplane prior to landing, he brought it down to, as the report said, 60 knots in a 30-degree bank, which in an SR-22 put it well below stall speed, and the airplane stalled, spun, and went in. And this was not a student pilot. This was a 600-hour pilot. He had 248 hours experience in the SR-22, and you just simply have to ask yourself, how many links in a chain have to be broken before we literally kill ourselves in one of these airplanes? This one was so egregious as to violate what we learn in Airmanship 101, and that is to protect the airspeed. But protecting the airspeed, hey, if it happened to him and wasn't able to maintain it, we see this as a probable cause developing in the crash that happened near our location here in Buffalo with Continental's Flight 3407, when the airspeed was allowed to decay to the point that the stick shaker in a Q400-8 was activated. Who was watching the airspeed? And this is something that if we don't have a very clear understanding of basic aerodynamics and what would happen, what happens when we drop to such a slow airspeed, then we make ourselves that more vulnerable. And we have to ask ourselves, are we teaching, you know, basic aerodynamics? Do we understand basic aerodynamics anytime we get into the airplane?
Well, I have to observe that there's something else here going on too. And this is something that affects ultralight pilots, gyroplane pilots, anybody who flies an ultralight pattern at 500 feet AGL and in an aircraft that's slow. These debates break out about, you know, I don't understand what happens when I turn downwind and lose altitude. Why do I lose altitude in a downwind turn? Well, the reason is because you're using your sense of ground speed as your reference rather than keeping a constant airspeed. And that's very easy to do when you're that close to the ground, and that's your normal kinesthetic sense. But if you're in an aircraft that has a stall speed of 70 knots, with flaps, and you're flying it with a 20 knot tailwind onto a runway, on approach, this could very easily happen to you even in a high performance aircraft.
Sure, it does. And that point that you make about using ground speed, visible ground speed, is spot on. That's what causes the problem. And the same thing happens when we're in IMC conditions, in instrument conditions. We simply have no outside reference. You know, I've always, and maybe we have a listener that can help us with this, but I have yet to see an airplane that has a low airspeed warning or enunciator on the panel. we have a stall speed annunciator, and when that goes off, it's pretty close to not too late, but I mean, we're right at the stall. I would like to see a device, particularly on our electronic panels that we have, that the pilot can set. That if the cruise speed on the airplane is 150, I could set it at, say, 110. My stall speed may be down at 70 or 60, but if for any reason the indicated airspeed drops below whatever I set it at, there ought to be an aural warning and a visual warning. Never do we have that, and I think it's because the engineers say, hey, listen, you know, how much do we have to do to the technology to protect us against the infirmities of our pilots? I mean, that is so basic, one should not have to put an alarm to remind a pilot to maintain thy airspeed. But if you check the accident data, the most frequent phase of flight in which accidents occur is during maneuvering flight, when we're going low and going slow. And that's because we lose sight of the fact that we're losing our airspeed to a point that the airplane quite literally falls out of the sky.
Well, you know, you mentioned a device that you could set for a particular threshold speed. I take it a step further. All the hardware is there. AHRS, air data computer, they know what plane it's being installed in. Those parameters could be set in a chip where when these conditions, I mean, it could calculate, it knows what your bank angle is. It could calculate what your stall speed is and give you a yellow line on the dashboard.
Yeah, it would be, what I would like to see would be a stall speed plus 20. Don't tell me when I'm in a stall. Tell me 20 knots before I get to a stall, or stall speed plus 30. And that, you know, that's very easy to achieve. But for some reason, in our own flight school, we have a standardization practice in using the Cessna 172s. It's a mantra, no turns less than 70 knots in the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And we just tell our students that, no turns less than 70 knots. Under no circumstances are you going to turn or bank this airplane under 70 knots. That keeps them very, very far away from a slow condition in a steep bank that would result in a stall.
Well, Bob, when we come back from the break, I want to ask you about something you wrote about in Over the Airwaves. It's one of the questions I think that's most troublesome for a lot of pilots, and that is, if you see something egregious going on in, regarding safety on the part of someone else, when do you maybe A, confront them, and B, maybe even drop a dime on them if it's going to threaten the lives of other people? Bob Miller is my guest. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from AeroNews.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près de moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here along with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, talking about safety issues and some of the current topics in Over the Airwaves. Bob, you wrote about unsafe pilot behavior and what the decisions we're faced with are when we see it going on the part of somebody else. Tell us how you got into that topic.
This is a tough one. I had the benefit of some wonderful parents, bless their souls, that had a framed quotation in my bedroom as a child growing up, and it really kind of maybe it gave me that kind of contrary spirit that I have right now. But it was a quote by Abraham Lincoln, which said, "To sin by silence when they should protest makes cowards of men." And I grew up pondering that statement and just began to wonder, at what point do we speak up versus what point do we go along to get along? And this comes up from time to time, and we see it in accident reports where we see another pilot engaged in a dangerous or a potentially dangerous activity, and we have to ask ourselves, at what time or at what point do we speak up versus just, you know, let things lie as they are? It's a tough call.
Well, you mentioned an instance that I'm sure a lot of people see on a regular basis, and that is, you know, you cite the case of four portly people piling into a 172 with full fuel and fishing gear. You know, you can know if that plane has been topped off. You can know just looking across the apron from a quarter mile away that plane is about to take off well over gross. You know, and we know there have been, it's hard to say in most cases that an accident is caused by an airplane being a little bit over gross, but at the same time, it does show up as a factor in some accidents. And it's particularly troublesome for me because you see people who are going flying with somebody they know and trust, and they probably have no idea that this airplane is being operated outside its envelope.
Well, I've always said that I have very little compassion for, and this may sound cruel, and I don't mean it to sound cruel, but I have very little passion for dead pilots. We aviators, we get into the airplane knowing the risks, or at least we should know the risks. But I have my heart aches anytime a passenger dies in an airplane. These are individuals, whether they're paying passengers or just family members. When an individual gets in an airplane, he or she assumes a safe outcome. And through some dumb pilot trick or inadequacy, that individual dies. That's when my heart aches. So, sure, when I see an individual getting into an airplane by himself or by herself, and you know, they're strolling down the taxiway with snow and ice still on their wings, you kind of scratch your head and say, well, there he goes again. But when you see that individual carrying passengers, you really have to step up to the plate and say something. And I've tried to do it without becoming a cop in the bushes or gaining a reputation of, you know, being a whistleblower. But there are things you can do. You can say things. And I've had things said to me. And we have to second guess sometimes our own judgments. I took a good friend's daughter up in a light sport airplane a couple of weeks ago and made an intersection departure. And when I got on the ground, the father of this 14-year-old girl came up to me and said, Bob, listen, when you take my daughter, I don't want to see an intersection departure. I want you to use the full runway. And at first I was taken back and somewhat angered that my safety judgment should be questioned. But then again, I looked from his perspective and said, well, there's no question from his perspective, and from any perspective, a full-length departure is always safer than an intersection departure. So sometimes we, particularly experienced aviators, we see things in a different light. We maybe assign more confidence to what we're doing. We're saying, well, you know, I've always taken off overweight before. It's never hurt me. Maybe the best thing that could happen to me would be to have a friend, you know, like the drinking and the driving. Good friends don't let their friends drive drunk. That has been a debate that I think we have won, that is nobody or very few people are offended, I think, anymore if somebody tries to take the keys away from a person who's been drinking and driving. But we have to do this. It's not quite so black and white in airplanes, particularly when, well, we see some ice on the wing, or we see an overloaded condition, or we see an airplane that isn't in the best repair. Then I think we do have to step up to the plate and say something. I really do. If it's going to help save a life, then it helps to save the industry.
Well, I guess the only thing we can advise our listeners is weigh the outcomes and decide whether you'd rather be the guy who's considered a rat in the pilot's lounge or the guy who has to live with his conscience afterward. That's a very tough call.
And the way you've just phrased it is profound. You know, you can get a reputation as being the rat in the pilot's lounge. You know, we don't want that. Nobody wants that. But I think if we are our best buddies, Jiminy Cricket, if we can sit on the shoulder of another pilot and, you know, put your arm around the guy and say, hey, listen, you know, you may want to rethink what you're doing here, or, you know, maybe we could talk about it. Now, I'm not saying pick up the phone or pick up the mic and blow the guy into the FAA. I mean, that can be overkill, and that might be the very last resort. And I've done that, and I'll be the first to admit that I have gotten the FAA involved in a situation where I thought the pilot was acting in a careless and reckless fashion, and we solved the problem. But that's sort of like dropping the atomic bomb. You don't need to do that when you can basically have a conversation with an individual. And most of us are pretty rational, clear-thinking individuals. And like my own situation with the intersection departure with the other pilot's daughter on board, sure, I can see his point of view. And I learned a lesson from that because, I have a daughter too.
At the same time, I remember an accident we discussed a few weeks ago about a Mooney pilot who de-iced his airplane with a hammer or with a wheel chock. I'll bet there are a couple of people who are thinking to themselves, maybe things would have been different in that fatal accident had somebody dropped a dime.
That's right. That's right. And we all need to do that. Again, as I said earlier in an earlier broadcast here, that the tipping point is our fatal accident rate. We've got to stop them. Any way we can, we've got to put a stop to these needless crashes.
All right, Bob, we don't always come up with answers, but I love the exotic questions. And we'll talk to you again and get another one next week.
Thanks, Bob.
Bob Miller has been my guest. You can find out more at www.overtheairwaves.com. Hey, before we go today, if you've ever been listening to these AeroCasts and said, I could do that, well, here's your chance. Aero News is looking for someone to be my backup this summer on days when I'm traveling or covering events and maybe work into a greater role down the road. If you can write and voice newscasts, feel comfortable interviewing newsmakers, know your way around Adobe Audition, have broadband internet access and work well with deadlines, get in touch with me by email at paulp, that's P-A-U-L-P, at aero-news.net. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.